Okay, here we go. Totally not gonna play Candy Crush. Do you know why?
Because you played as much as you can for free today.
No, I just said it so that you wouldn't think I was gonna finish this Candy Crush game. But if I just stop playing, I lose the life. Welcome to What's the Deal, the Seinfeld review show that's been restarted like 50 times. Each week we dissect every episode of Seinfeld in chronological order. With me today is Patrick Armstrong.
Hello.
I'm Cameron Wong, and this is episode 34, and today we will be looking at season 3, episodes 17 and 18 in The Boyfriend. We've had a lot of false starts today, Patrick.
It's been terrible. I blame the internet and Microsoft for messing up Skype.
Yeah. Can't handle the system load now that no one can be on MSN chat or whatever the service was called. MSN Messenger.
No, they can't handle it.
They've overloaded the servers with small amounts of text.
Just one sec, sorry. Sorry about that.
What happened?
Oh, just grandma was trying to kiss me. My cat.
Oh boy. But you know, we like the show, so we persevered.
Mm-hmm. We'll do it. And we missed last week.
No, we didn't miss last week.
Oh, we didn't?
Well, we recorded an episode. You were there. Do you remember that?
I remember. But I mean, the show didn't work.
It's true. An astute listener would have noticed that the last episode they heard, we said episode 32, and today we said episode 34.
Mm-hmm.
Also, some of the listeners might notice, those who are the most Sherlockian, mm-hmm. Would notice that there's only two voices on the show today.
Holmesian. Now, where's Chris and Justin? What happened?
Ghosts.
Ghosts. Yeah, so just the twos of us today.
Yeah, so Christopher Young, I believe, will be back with us officially next week as he has wrapped up his film.
Mm-hmm.
And Justin Armstrong died in a grease fire.
It's tragic.
Or he just couldn't be here today.
Yeah. He's done us a lot of favors by being on the show a lot of times.
What do you think people will say about the dynamic of just the two of us on the show?
Boring.
Boring.
Pointless.
Drivel.
Irritating. Sort
of aimless.
That's why they listen.
They come in tight every week. Patrick, how are you today?
I'm good. Doing pretty well. My dog's been sick. Been nursing him back to health. And feed him a lot of pumpkin, chicken, rice.
Now, do you just give him the giant gourd, or how does that work?
I buy the canned pumpkin and mix it with some rice and some boiled chicken. It's all boiled. It sounds really unappealing. But, I mean, he's a dog, so he doesn't seem to mind. He seems to like it, actually.
I heard from the lovely lady in your life that your dog pooped on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
And that you didn't notice.
Well, to be fair, I think what happened is he pooped on the floor and got poop on his paws and then stepped on the couch. Or he had poop on his bum. I don't think he directly pooped on it.
So it was like poop by proxy.
Yeah. I mean, still not the thing you want to happen. But you know, we got it all cleaned up. He's healthy. Healthier. Trying to put some weight back on him. I think he'll pull through.
Let's
How are you doing,
so.
Cameron?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah?
I pooped on the couch last week.
No.
No, not at all. No, I'm
I
doing
mean,
all
sometimes
right.
You poop on the couch.
Yeah, but that's just more of a hobby.
Yeah.
It's just a pastime. Do you know what happened? In just the last 30 seconds, I almost had a third host that was just going to suddenly join us on the episode.
Oh, really? Who was that?
Wouldn't that have been exciting?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you be kind of thrilled if someone just kind of like hopped onto the show?
Yeah, that'd be great. Didn't happen though.
No, I don't. I don't think it's gonna happen. I'd love for it to happen. You would have been thrilled.
Yeah, it would have been great. Hey, I have a question for you.
Yeah, ask me. I bet I already know what the question is.
So, you mentioned it earlier. My lady friend gave you a present the other day. Wondering if you ate it.
I didn't actually mention that she gave me a present. I mentioned that she said that there's a poop on your couch, which I'm not going to eat.
No.
But I knew what the question was going to be because she's actively sending me messages right now about
it. Oh, really?
Yes. So just the other day, I was presented with a frozen hamburger, a ready-to-go hamburger. And I don't really know how to describe it. It's called, I believe, the Drive-In All-American Cheeseburger or something.
Sounds delicious.
It's guaranteed to always be soft, and you just prepare it by putting it in the microwave.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't eaten it yet. I'm not going to lie, I'm afraid to eat it.
No, it'd be delicious. You like a hamburger?
I do.
You like the microwave? How can it be bad?
I've had a prepackaged hamburger before, though. And
was it in a can?
No, that would have been great.
I saw a German canned hamburger once.
It was from a gas station. And I was really excited. I thought it was going to be really, really good. Turns out I was wrong. It was really bad. I mean, it's a really cute looking little box. Although I'm a little dismayed by how little the box weighs for its contents. And by the calorie content. I don't think you add water to it, no.
It's not like in Looney Tunes?
No, I don't think it's like that at all.
Hmm.
So for our listeners, let me go ahead and tell you something. You should go ahead and go to whatsthedealshow.com. When you head over there, you're going to be able to see all the show notes for today's episodes. Not just half of it, not just a little bit. There's no pay gate. You just go there, you have the show notes. You can also look at the little picture, which may or may not be there for this week's episode, and maybe a picture of the hamburger. I don't know. You'll find out, but head over there and check it out.
I would love that.
Yeah, it would be great.
Mm-hmm.
This week's episode that we're looking at is a two-parter. The first one, it's called The Boyfriend. It was aired together as one episode, originally titled The New Friend. And in this week's episode, Jerry meets his baseball icon, Keith Hernandez. Or as Patrick calls him... what he just said. Jerry is a little nervous about the relationship, and he's taking it quite seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Elaine, at the same time, also begins a relationship with Keith Hernandez, but in a different way. George, on the other hand, is dying to stay on unemployment insurance, and Newman and Kramer try to crack the riddle of the magic loogie. And that's all in one episode.
Mm-hmm. It's a big episode.
That's what you can fit into 47 minutes.
It's long. It felt a little long to me.
I mean, you could also fit in two episodes of What's the Deal, and that's got to feel long for everybody else.
So do you think this episode's going to be 3 hours long then?
This? I'm hoping this will be our longest episode ever, totaling in at 16 hours.
I think we can do it. I mean, our listeners can right now look at their podcast listener and see, you know, that it's an hour and 15 minutes or whatever. But, you know, we can hope.
Hold on to hope. Hold on to hope.
Yeah. So, want to kick off the episode?
Yeah, let's start.
So, we start off with the monologue. That's all episodes so far have. And Jerry, he's got a classic bit talking about, why do we work out? What are we getting in shape for? All we're doing is going to the gym.
I really like people who go to the gym and they are just basically getting in shape for themselves, and it's not for any sort of event, and they're always like, they get really ripped, right? You know, like the guys are always going to the gym, the big muscles, like Justin.
Mm-hmm.
What I really like is to use the excuse that you don't want to get ripped.
As I don't want to get too big, you know?
Yeah, the reason to not go to the gym or to not do the exercise is that you just, you don't want to get too big. Because that's what happens. You go there one time, mm-hmm. and then you come out of there looking like Bane.
Also, if you did end up in this weird state where you're too muscly, it's not like you couldn't just stop working out, you know?
No, you're committed.
Those muscles last forever.
One in there and then you can't stop. There's nothing to stop you at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I also like in the monologue that Jerry talks about, I'm not even sure how he gets on to this topic, but he talks about how if he was dropping off his car at a restaurant, he would just give his car keys to someone wearing a red jacket and would just assume it was a valet.
Well, he's talking about how we're so concerned about the stuff in our gym locker. You know, we lock up our sweaty gym clothes, you know, with this tough lock. But
right.
Our car, the valet, we're fine just giving it to anyone.
Would
have
I
you
really...
ever had valet parking?
No, I never have. I actually thought about how much I really wish that I have had that opportunity, but it's never happened. How about you?
Never.
What do you imagine it would be like?
It's incredibly luxurious.
It would feel pretty good. And yet, because I'm just, you know, poor enough to never be in the world where there's valet parking, in my mind, I feel like I would never trust them.
Yeah, also, I feel like I would be embarrassed of my car. Because I feel like they're getting, you know, like a fancy BMW or like other luxury cars. And then my like crappy 2002 economy car, you know, I bring it up and be like, yeah, be real careful. I know where all the scratches are.
Yeah, I would definitely, I mean, number one, they wouldn't be able to roll down the windows. Number two, as they try to step over all of the wrappers for the bagels and things that I have strewn strategically around my car, I would probably feel slightly embarrassed about that.
Yeah, definitely.
But it did seem like a good idea for an episode of Seinfeld, that Jerry gives his keys to someone who he thinks is a valet and then his car just gets stolen.
Oh yeah, it's just some random guy who happens to be wearing a red jacket.
Yeah, but not so.
Yeah, and like Kramer could have given the guy the jacket or something.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Bob Sacamano.
You know, it's good though, this monologue, it does actually deal with the first, like, you know, talking about the gym, the locker room. And lo and behold, the first scene of the episode, they're in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice. It's nice that it doesn't have nothing to do with the rest of the episode as monologues often do. So I guess they were just playing basketball. Oh, wait, did you have something else to say?
No, I was just going to say, I found it odd that they were all playing a team sport together.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you think they're playing like pickup basketball where you just have a few people and then you can play basketball or something, you know? Because this is the first time they played together.
Yeah. Well, at the very least, it's the first time they've all seen each other naked, according to Kramer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. So, you know, there's a little preamble, but the meaty joke, as it will, is as you will, is that they all saw each other naked, and you know, Kramer's like, "You guys didn't sneak a peek." Kramer snuck a peek.
Kramer, he has no sense. He's a pod.
Yeah.
Although George also sneaks a peek, so.
Yeah, it was just a blur to him, though. It is a weird situation, though, especially being in a locker room nude with someone you know. Like, especially if they want to have a conversation. Like, I don't really normally feel comfortable talking to anyone in the locker room. I just want to get dressed, get out of there, then we can have a conversation. But most people, you know, like to chat in the locker room.
Do they?
Yeah, people always chat in the locker room.
When we've been in a locker room together, did I chat at you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, sorry, pal.
That's all right. It's fine. I think it's abnormal to not want to chat. But
I mean, my thing is more like, it's like the showers or the protracted naked chat. You know what? If you've got clothes on, you can talk as long as you want. But
yeah,
like I'm in there and there's like two old guys and they're like leaning on the walls. Everything's hanging out there.
Yeah, things are flopping around.
Yeah, it's a bad scene, man.
And it's funny, when you're talking to someone you know, or just anyone who is naked, I'm very focused on maintaining eye contact or looking away entirely. Normally, like, if I'm talking to someone, you know, look at them in the eye and then, you know, take a look at their shoes or, like, what kind of clothes they're wearing, you know, the whole kind of thing.
Straight at their crotch.
Yeah. But in the locker room, eyeballs or, you know.
Eyeballs or what? Which balls?
Yeah, any balls.
Take your pick.
it's weird. It's a weird situation where I know that their genitals are in my peripheral vision, but I'm trying very hard to not see that. It's not even like I think like I'll be contaminated somehow if I see their genitals. I'm seeing lots of genitals in that locker room. I just feel like I don't want to be like staring at someone's genitals in the locker room. It feels weird.
Like feels you're crossing
too intimate.
A line.
It feels too intimate for a totally boring situation, like in between exercising and not exercising.
Or maybe it's exactly what you needed. Ooh. I mean, don't maybe I feel like your eyes are drawn to it. So why aren't you, you can't win an argument with the body.
I don't know. It's the same thing like when, you know, like a woman has a t-shirt with words or a picture on, you know, like on their bosom, if you will. Like I don't want to, like I might want to look at the picture, but I also don't want to like leer at a woman's breasts, you know.
I think you can look at the picture. I think there's a difference between look and leer.
I know there is, but you know, I don't want to be misinterpreted, you know. I don't want to make people uncomfortable or make someone angry.
What you should do is have like kind of like a steel plate that just kind of protrudes just underneath your eyes and it sticks out about like 2 inches. And so that way you really have to make an effort.
That's a good idea. It'll be really obvious, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in the locker room, we also see that Keith Hernandez is hanging out there. And, there's one more thing first. George has 2 weeks unemployment left over and, he's worried about this. And he has to go to the unemployment office and they meet Keith Hernandez. George does not seem super impressed with him.
Well, what I don't understand is what is, especially, you know, then and maybe also for a Mets fan, what exactly is it that has brought this famous athlete into this dingy looking gym?
I don't know. Maybe it's just, maybe he's been going there a long time, you know, something, just likes it. Maybe he was meeting a friend there.
Maybe he heard that Jerry works out there and he was hoping to bump into him.
Because, yeah, he does seem excited to meet Jerry.
But, I mean, I don't buy it. There's no way he would be in that place. That looks worse than a high school locker room.
I was wondering whether it was the same set as that scene where we see Jerry and George in the locker room when they're teenagers and when like the baked bean gym teacher gives George a wedgie.
Oh, I'm almost sure it is.
Because the lockers are the same color. Like maybe it's the same lockers, maybe not the same set, something like that.
Maybe they just rearranged it in another room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's different lockers.
Oh, okay.
The lockers in that scene in that episode are gray.
And so maybe the reason that George isn't super impressed with Keith Hernandez, because he seems impressed at first, like he's impressed that he's a Civil War buff. But then George says, you know, there are all these ball clubs flying all their people around for all these games. How come there's never a plane crash? Which is a really weird thing to ask someone. It's like asking them, like, why haven't they died in a plane crash? It seems it's a very weird thing to ask. And George seems, you know, kind of confused that Keith Hernandez and Jerry are offended by this question.
It's a really weird and dark place to take a conversation with a total stranger.
Yeah. Isn't it weird that you haven't died in a plane crash? It seems like you're due.
I mean, at the same time, I'm not gonna lie, I've actually thought about this before. Like, what would you be, what could you do?
The thing is, though, there aren't really that many plane crashes,
But
right?
what if you lost a whole team?
Be a tragedy, I guess.
How would they
Didn't
fix that?
isn't that the whole idea, like with that movie Alive? That soccer team crash? Wasn't that based on real life?
I think it's based on a true story, yeah.
So I wonder what happened to that soccer team.
Well, I don't know.
But maybe it's just like a college team, and then it's just like, I guess you just get the next best. I mean, I feel like they could just. Do you think? Yeah, I don't know. I guess they either shut down. They probably don't shut down the whole team, right? Maybe they skip the next season, but they rebuild that team. Don't you think?
Yeah, I guess they'd have to. Now, it was a
Yeah.
rugby team, apparently.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I guess you just rebuild the team. I don't know. Anyway, it's a weird question to ask Keith Hernandez. But Jerry and Keith Hernandez, they're gonna, they exchange numbers and they make vague plans for the future. They're gonna get coffee or something.
Now, would you be able to approach a celebrity? If you saw one.
So, what level of celebrity? Like, I guess this is like a sports star.
Yeah, so sports figure. And he's a fairly major sports figure, or at least he was.
I think
I mean, for a Mets
probably not.
fan, a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I think probably not. But in this case, Keith Hernandez came up to Jerry, right?
He did. He approached him, but I want to know, could you approach?
I
Like,
think
let's.
probably not. I think maybe if I was like next in line to someone and I really liked that person, like it was like maybe a smaller celebrity than a movie star. So maybe, I don't know, what would be my equivalent?
What if you saw Jerry Seinfeld?
If I saw Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah, I think I might, if I were like next to him in line in the ATM, maybe I'd say hello, something like that. But if you were just in a restaurant or in a locker room, I probably wouldn't say anything. Would you?
I would have to.
If it were Jerry Seinfeld.
If it was Jerry Seinfeld. 'Cause I'd never be able to forgive myself.
What would you say? You're a really big fan?
I might just say, yeah, maybe.
Would you try to be clever and go with like a quote?
I'd put a Pez dispenser on his lap. No, I'd probably just. It would probably be the really cliche thing. It'd probably be like, "Hello, I'm a big fan," something like that. Or, "No, I just wanted to say that, I really like your work. I really like your comedy."
Hey, I love B movie.
You just had to get that in there.
Yeah.
You know what's great actually about that is that when I saw Seinfeld last time, he took questions from the audience. And I wanted to ask a question about B movie.
Was it like a continuity question or something?
No, I wanted to know if they thought they'd make another one.
Oh. When does B movie 2 come out?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of buzz about it.
I'm sure you'd love that.
Well, I'm gonna see Jerry Seinfeld this Saturday, so maybe I'll ask him then.
Yeah, you should.
I mean, sure, I'll be really far back from him in a massive auditorium, but
I'm sure you'll be able to shout something that'll catch his ear, and then he'll be like, "Who is that? Come down here."
I'll shout out, "Say Newman."
And then he'll invite you to come down, take a ride for him with him in one of his fancy cars, and you'll go have coffee with him.
That sounds great.
And he'll film it and put it on the internet.
That or security will take me away.
Probably that one. Yeah.
In the next scene.
So yeah, the restaurant. Jerry's there with Elaine. He's quite sad that Keith Hernandez hasn't called. And he has this whole thing where, he's acting like the the jilted would-be girlfriend who's upset that you know, this inconsiderate man hasn't called yet, and you know, Elaine's just saying she should call him. And you know, it's quite a long bit where the bit is basically just Jerry saying stereotypical like female lines, and I guess the joke is just the role reversal.
It is, and Elaine kind of playing along with it for a while. It felt odd. I'm not really sure how much I enjoyed this section of the scene.
It was a little funny. I think they just needed like two lines, right? Like they just needed to establish that the like Jerry is kind of like a jilted lover, but you know, it was a long bit. They had to fill that 45 minutes.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the scenes where you could tell that they didn't have quite enough material to cover the full length of the episode.
Yeah. They also remind us in the scene that Elaine hates cigarettes, which is important information for the future.
It's called foreshadowing.
Yeah. I did like the Jerry. He almost switches to like an upset aunt or something. You know, talking about like grandmother talking about their grandson not calling, and like people are too busy. What's too busy? Pick up a phone, right? Or like a mother whose son doesn't call enough, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like the are your fingers broken?
Yeah, call your poor mother.
What accent was that?
I don't know. Generic immigrant.
Babushka.
Oh, my baby, call your mother.
And we thought we needed Chris to offend people.
yeah, I mean, I definitely felt the scene went on a little long. It was a little uncomfortable. But, yeah. There's a cut to the monologue, and Jerry talks about how it's very hard to make a friend in your 30s.
I think that's true. I think it's hard to make a friend once you're about 26.
Yeah, once you're not in those like forced situations like high school or college or whatever, it is harder, I think, to make friends. I think that's why people join softball teams, that kind of thing. Because, you know, that pool at work tends to be a pretty limited pool. And unless you're very fortunate, you're not going to meet too many people you want to hang out with, you know?
Is this a dig at my softball team?
You're on a softball team?
No, but I did talk about joining a softball team.
Oh.
And no, I'm getting close to 30. This is my last chance to make some friends.
It's not a dig at all. I do like the joke, though, about how when you're a kid, it's really easy to make a friend, and any kind of connection can make that person a friend. I definitely had a friend who was friends with me because we both liked Super Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat, and we would just hang out and play those two games.
Yeah, I had lots of those friends of convenience. I had a friend for a day because he owned a copy of Earthworm Jim.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I went to his house once.
I had a friend who was my friend because he had a 3D card for his computer, so Quake looked really good.
Oh, wow. Was it a Voodoo Banshee?
It was one of the first good one. So yeah, maybe a Voodoo Banshee, the one where you like route the other card into this one.
Into right? Which one is this one?
Well, like the 2D card goes out and then into the 3D card, and then the 3D card spits it out to
the video card.
So maybe that was a 3D Banshee or something. Like it didn't do 2D graphics.
I think a Voodoo Banshee was a 2D 3D.
Oh, well, it was one of those. One of the first like Voodoo cards. Anyway, Quake looked really good. It was very impressive.
I bet it did. Was it running in Glide?
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. It was like some unimaginable resolution, like 800 by 600 or 1024 by 768. It was really good.
See, this is where our show should clearly be on some sort of...
Like tech network?
Yeah, because What percentage of our listeners do you think right now are just wondering what's going on? Do you think any of them know what we're talking about when I say...
What are these numbers? What is 1024 by 760? I know at least a couple.
What is glide?
Yeah. How does that relate to OpenGL and DirectX?
Let's talk about glide wrappers next.
What about Windquake?
So on Seinfeld.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it is funny how you like have those, like as you're a kid, you can just, it's all like as an adult, you think those relationships, it's like using someone. It's like if you knew someone who had a really cool car, you'd want to be friends with them. But as a kid, it is completely acceptable. And those kids, they must, you know, they must know, right? But I think they kind of appreciate it, you know, they're just happy to have a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually, my mom told me that apparently when I was a child, I based my friends largely off of who did and who did not have a Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And she was really concerned that it was too materialistic.
Yeah. And so, what if your friends had a Game Genie? Oh, man. Best friend.
Yeah, I was going to say, they move up a level. And if they lend me their Game Genie?
Oh, man. Super Mario 3, unlimited P-Wings.
I never had a Game Genie.
No, me neither. I don't know why. I borrowed one once, and it was pretty great, but... it was brief, and I never understood the codes. I always thought I could just figure out the code, but you had that big book. I don't know.
I don't know who was coming up with those codes.
Yeah, I don't even know how it worked.
The reason why I didn't have one, because the choice is always, if I went to the store and I'd saved up my money, it's like, do I want to get a Game Genie, or do I want a whole new game?
Yeah, get a whole new game.
Yeah. But then I was always jealous of the kid with the Game Genie.
Yeah. Well, I figured that those kids were the kids who were allowed to get as many games as they wanted. They just had to ask for a game and their parents bought them one.
Who is that kid, though?
I don't know. Kids of, like, parents who are orthodontists or something.
This is just like, I think I already talked about her on an episode of our show, but I had this friend in elementary school who, her father was a provincial court judge and her mother was a lawyer.
Oh, man.
And let me tell you, she was.
I bet she had a Neo Geo.
She didn't, but she could probably have. She got this insane amount of money for her allowance. And I only, as with all things in my life as a child, filtered everything through Nintendo. So the way I worked out the value of her allowance was in how many Nintendo games she could buy a month.
Oh, yeah. You talked about this.
But yeah, I mean, that was blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I went to a birthday party at her house. It was amazing. They had, like, the little electronic dartboard that said your score when you throw the darts into it.
Did they have a pinball game? Oh man.
Probably.
One time I went to a friend's house and they had a pinball machine.
Now, was he your friend or was he a kid who had a pinball machine so he became your friend?
He had a TurboGrafx 16 and I had never played that before, so I was excited to go to his house.
The pinball...
Bonk's Adventure.
The pinball machine rung really true for me because I made friends with the kid because I found out he had a pinball machine.
Oh, boy. So at the Department of Labor, George, you know, he wants to renew his unemployment. It's going to run out in 2 weeks. You know, he says he's looking. He's listening for work. Listening for work is very underrated. And says he went to Vandalay Industries to interview for a latex salesman. He was very close to getting that job.
I love how George is putting more work into his EI, or his UI, I guess as it is, than actually getting a job.
Yeah, he's putting a lot of work into this. He ends up dating this horrible woman. yeah, and he constructs this elaborate lie. I don't know, it's pretty good. I like this woman's I've seen it all. Like all this, all these lies and excuses that people come up with attitude. And she just seems exhausted.
It was kind of my thought, actually, that maybe that is one of the worst possible jobs. Because it's got to be like working at, say, a money lending place.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to watch people wallow in their lowest moments.
Yeah.
And then you have George Costanza being indignant and self-righteous.
I have to admit, though, these scenes, he's pretty good at thinking on his feet. I mean, eventually it all collapses in on him. But, you know, he thinks of this Vandalay Industries thing. And, you know, he ends up rushing to Jerry's apartment and arranging the whole thing. And, you know, later we'll get to it. But he's pretty good at this.
Yeah, we've actually seen a lot of George kind of struggling in the moment recently, so it was kind of nice to watch him hit a few out of the park, as it
were. Yeah, he's almost smooth.
Like a seal.
Yeah, he's hitting some triples anyway.
Good baseball parlance.
Yeah, I learned it from Keith Hernandez. In the next scene, we're in the apartment, and Jerry is nervous about his... I mean, might as well call it a date with Keith Hernandez, because he called. And Jerry's asking about this hideous shirt, whether it's acceptable. I mean, it's really ugly. It looks like he's got a Mandelbrot set fractal on it or something. It's bad.
It's really bad. It's so flashy. It's so... I don't know. He looks like he's wearing someone's couch, but someone threw up on it first.
I mean, it looks like a shirt that Prince would wear, but with like a ruffled collar on it.
I think it's a little too fancy for Prince.
Too fancy for Prince. Well, it is pretty fancy. I mean, it almost looks like a shirt that like a grandmother would wear, like kind of a fancy grandmother to go on a cruise.
Yeah, that could be cruise wear for a fancy grandmother. They love the heavy patterns, don't they?
Yeah, they love them. So Jerry is complaining about how he doesn't want to see this baby that, never really goes anywhere. I think the whole joke is that Jerry wants to say, "You gotta come and see the baby." That seems like the only joke. Isn't that the only joke that ever comes of this?
What's that?
Isn't that the only, like, this whole subplot with going to see this baby?
Yeah.
Isn't the whole joke just Jerry saying that line in the annoying voice that you got to see the baby?
I think so. Yeah. I think that's...
They could have cut this right out of the episode.
Well, I mean, they do see the baby, though.
I know, but I mean, when they're there, the joke is just that Jerry doesn't care about the baby.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. This is filler.
Yeah.
There's a lot of filler going on in this episode.
Yeah. The meat of this scene, which I think is probably one of the gold moments of this whole season, actually, is Jerry's talking about Keith Hernandez. Kramer walks in and, you know, hears about Keith Hernandez and says he hates Keith Hernandez. And Newman walks in and says he despises Keith Hernandez.
It's a really weird Newman appearance, like he's hiding in a closet.
Yeah, and he's wearing a Mets hat, isn't he?
Yeah.
Or is that a Yankees hat?
It's a Mets hat.
Yeah, and so, we learn about June 14th, 1987. Basically, Kramer and Newman were at a ball game. They think that Keith Hernandez lost the game, and as they're leaving the ballpark, they see Keith Hernandez, and Newman says, "Nice game, pretty boy." And then they both get spit in their eye, and they assume it's Keith Hernandez, but Jerry, in JFK style, debunks the story. Did you like this scene? Do you like this?
I like it. I think the sort of replicated JFK footage, they do a really good job. If you watch, you can see the... spoiler alert here. You can see the second spitter up in the bushes. I just think they do a really good job with the reenactment.
I think
Jerry's
really
good. It's a great job.
I think Kramer's acting when he gets spit in the eye is really great. Like he looks like it really hurt.
Yeah, I also like the background actor who's like cradling his child as Kramer gets hit. The whole thing's really good. I also actually think that Newman in here is really good in slow mo as he's saying,
"Good, nice job, good job." Boy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, nice job, game, pretty boy. I don't know. It's really great. Once again, Wayne Knight is just Newman from the beginning. Yeah. He doesn't miss a beat.
You know, Wayne Knight is so Newman in my eyes that when I watch Jurassic Park, like Wayne Knight's maybe like other most notable role, I still think of him in the back of my mind as being Newman. Like
he just is essentially maybe, Newman.
Like Newman's like maybe a little more ambitious than Newman, but like he's still scheming. He's got like the same laugh. He's still kind of, you know, people just seen him as kind of disgusting. All I see is Newman.
I don't think you'd be wrong. When I see him now, he's actually lost a lot of weight. I don't know if you've seen him in recent years.
I have, yeah. He looks good. Much healthier.
Do you know how come he lost all that weight?
No.
He became extremely ill filming an episode of Seinfeld where he had to run a lot, and it was the doctors who spoke to him in that incident that told him that, you know, he needed to turn his life around in that regard.
Or he would, like, die or something?
Pretty much.
I mean, I've heard similar stories. People say, like, they've had a doctor tell them if they don't lose weight, they will die. And they're, like, pretty plain about it, and it seems like a pretty big wake-up call. I mean, being told if you don't change something about your life, you'll die, and someone is serious, that's got to be a real shock.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, if they don't change it around, they'll just die, and then we won't hear from them again, right? So, like, I mean, like, when that happens, either something changes or that person dies. So you see some kind of change.
I feel like we just took this in the direction of the airplanes and the baseball away games.
Yeah. Anyway, Wayne Knight, looking good.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
And I really, one last thing I wanted to say about this is Jerry's acting here. I think it's pretty good. Like, I love Jerry's, it's like kind of like bad, good acting. Like, it seems like Jerry is going to crack up at any minute. But, you know, he has this kind of like smug attitude that he often has when he's with Newman. You know, but he's really enjoying playing Professor here.
Yeah, and in this scene in particular, the way he kind of always smirks as he delivers his jokes just kind of comes off as if he's being condescending to these two who are being idiots, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
I also like when George comes running in that his hair is just like flapping up in the air at the end of this scene.
Yeah, so George comes running in to warn Jerry about Vandelay Industries. And George, his hair, it's quite amazing. Yeah, like straight up. I don't know how they managed it. They did a good job with that. I guess a lot of hairspray. But it's pretty funny. Yeah, so he says that they have to answer the phone, Vandelay Industries, from now on. Yeah.
Feels good.
It's a good scene. I think it's probably the best of the episode.
It's all downhill from here, folks.
Yeah. So we see Jerry on his date with Keith Hernandez. And
Hernandez.
You know, yeah, it's ending. I guess Keith is dropping Jerry off at his apartment. And Jerry has a bit of inner monologue trying to decide if he can shake Keith's hand. Which is pretty funny, you know. And then Keith asks him if he wants to go on a movie date on the weekend.
Yeah, so what's kind of interesting about this scene, I think, is that every time we have Jerry's inner monologue, I always kind of feel like we're getting an interesting sort of like unfiltered look at the way Jerry acts. And in this scene, it's one of the first times where he not only sounds like he lacks confidence in his inner monologue, but he almost sounds like slightly scared.
Yeah, you know, Jerry does have a lot of, like, his persona in the show has a lot of confidence. So it is weird to see him with like this terrified persona.
Yeah, like he's really scared about this handshake thing that's going on.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I kind of know what he means, because I never know if I'm supposed to give someone a handshake or not.
I never offer a hand unless, you know, if someone's had a baby, offer a handshake. Because, you know, people, that's something you definitely congratulate someone on. If someone gets married, you can offer a handshake.
What if you saw an old boss?
Old boss.
So nah, someone who's older than you, too.
If they put out their hand to shake my hand, I would shake it, but I would never offer it.
Because I did a double handshake today. When wow. When I saw
the
person.
What's a double handshake?
So I gave them the handshake when I first saw them, and then when the conversation was over, I gave them another one.
Oh. I probably wouldn't do that. If I have been like talking to a colleague over email and I'd like interacted with them for quite a while, because like I work in computers, so I often will email people for literally years before I meet them in person and like talk to them on IM and stuff, or Skype or something, and then I might meet them. Maybe I'll shake their hand, you know, because I'm encountering them in the flesh for the first time. But normally, yeah, I'm not a handshaker.
I love a good handshake, but I just don't want other people to feel like it. It's just because, like, I don't like it if someone gives me, say, an unsolicited hug.
Oh, yeah. That's terrible.
So I feel that an unsolicited handshake is close to, it's probably not as bad, but, you know, if the person doesn't want a handshake, it is some sort of physical contact.
You know, what's funny is one time I was riding my bike and, like, I was in the bike lane and I was riding to work, and then there was this white van like next to me, and I was a little nervous about it because it was like right next to me going the same speed as me. Mm-hmm. And I was worried like it would turn or something, and it did happen. And like an intersection came, he never signaled or looked and just like went to take a right turn, and he like I slammed right into the side of the van. And it was, I mean, I was going pretty fast, and the van was going pretty fast, so it was pretty painful. You know, like there were little pebbles and stuff embedded in my hand and my knee. And, you know, the guy like comes out and he, like gets out of his van, and he like looks concerned, and then he looks mad, and he's like, I was just kind of like in shock and confused. He's like, "You should be more careful. What are you doing?" And I was like, I was just biking. And you turned, and then he was like, "You have to look where you're going." And I was just very confused. And he's like, you're all right. We don't need to call anyone. It's like, no, I guess not. I'm going to be late for work. And then he's like, "Okay, you be more careful." And then this guy like hit me with his van, but I wanted to shake his hand. I have no idea why, but that was my impulse. And I started putting out my hand to shake and had to like pull it back because it was not appropriate. But I don't know. It was weird. It was the first time I think I ever wanted to shake someone's hand, and it was completely inappropriate.
Maybe it was because you had just been concussed.
I mean, I did hit my head on the side of his van. I was wearing a helmet, but it was still, you know, hitting my head. So maybe that explains it.
Although, I mean, that's kind of like how, I don't know, have you ever gotten a speeding ticket or anything like that?
Mm-mm.
The very first time I got a speeding ticket, this was like, God, I don't know, it was years ago, and I've actually only ever gotten one, but after I got the ticket and he handed it to me, I said thank you. And I've always thought about that since then. I mean, you want to be polite to the guy, you're kind of afraid of his authority, but afterwards I really thought about it, like, why would I say thank you? Like, I wanted this. Like, I needed it. I was craving this ticket.
Thank you for your service, sir.
You're doing a great job for the community. I look forward to paying this large fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because it's kind of an upsetting experience for you. And you feel like it must be upsetting for that person, too. And you're like, well, I'm glad we resolved this situation and everyone's okay.
It all worked out for all parties. A final note on this scene is that Keith asks for Elaine's phone number. So Jerry gets the handshake, but the handshake has a price, I guess, because Keith, he's taking a shine to Elaine. This must be weird. I would feel awkward if someone asked me if they could have, like, an old Flames contact information or something.
Even just, like, a friend, like, if a friend asked for another friend's phone, like a phone number, and they didn't really know each other, I feel like I would have to ask the other person first if it was okay.
Especially if it was like, if it's for a date.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I mean, you know.
Yeah. But Jerry didn't seem to care; just offered it up.
Well, he got that handshake.
Well, he's got to do something. He's got to keep Keith on side.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. So. After the date, they're in the apartment, and Jerry and George are kind of deconstructing their date. You know, George is asking about the whole thing, you know, the handshake.
How many pumps?
How many pumps? What kind of handshaker he is? Same thing. Did you notice Jerry's terrible turtleneck?
Oh, I sure did. I couldn't look away.
Yeah, it's bright purple, like a big, you know, it's quite a neck on it. It goes all the way up to the chin. It's quite a thing. Pretty ugly.
You want a full neck on a turtleneck.
Yeah, it's an ugly thing. And and then we learned that Elaine comes in. We learned that Elaine's date with Keith Hernandez after he called conflicts with Jerry's movie date with Keith. Jerry's pretty jealous and upset.
He is. And you know what? This is the sort of relationship humor between Jerry and Elaine that I'm comfortable with, that I think is good. I love that Elaine, for a second, is feeling really good about it because she thinks Jerry is jealous of her, and then she realizes that he's jealous about Keith.
I like how upset she is when she realizes he's jealous of Keith.
Yeah, you know, because that's the sort of, like, that's that background romance. That's where it's working for me. That's where I feel, I don't know, but that I like where they're willing to kind of, like, talk about their once relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great. And I also like how much George is enjoying this.
Yeah, he loves it. Because, you know, I don't even know why he likes it so much.
He's got some sort of problem with Hernandez.
But why is he enjoying Elaine and Jerry's distress about this?
I guess it's because he was kind of jealous about Jerry having this new friend.
Oh, yeah.
So he's enjoying watching it implode. Is it imploding or is it exploding?
It's kind of both.
It's called the thermometer.
Yeah. And so we also see, I forget why Jerry leaves. He leaves the room for some reason. And Kramer sits down with Elaine. It's a little awkward. The phone rings. It's the unemployment office. And of course, Kramer knows nothing about Vandelay Industries. Doesn't take Elaine or George's hint well. Says she's got it all wrong. George comes, does some good acting, comes bursting out of the bathroom, shouting, falls on the ground, pants down. It's blown for him. And
save Vandelay Industries.
Yeah, there's a classic line. Jerry comes back in, and you want to be my latex salesman. It's pretty good.
It's a really funny scene. It's a really, really well done scene. There's something, number one, obviously so iconic about that line about being his latex salesman. Mm-hmm. But there's also something really great about the way that George comes flying out and he's just like crawling on his hands and knees in his boxers.
Yeah, it's the same kind of like physical comedy that that Michael Richards is really good at, and we don't often see. I mean, we see Jason Alexander do a lot of shouting, but not often like the physical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he did a really good job with this. It's really funny.
Why do you think that Kramer like just does not listen to, like, Elaine's actively trying to stop this the whole time?
I don't know. I think he's just trying to concentrate on the phone call and he just sees everyone else as a distraction. And he's like, no, I know this isn't Vandelay Industries. I'll tell her. Don't worry about it. And I don't know. I mean, it's not weird for Kramer to be oblivious about something.
It's true. It just seems so odd because it just seemed like he didn't care. He's so easily distracted by everything throughout these episodes, like constantly. And yet, mm-hmm. for some reason, now he's got tone. He's got lock on this phone call. He can't do anything. Where am I going with this analogy?
I don't know.
Maverick. That was my Top Gun reference. Just saying, Maverick.
Okay. You're dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Shirtless volleyball.
Iceman.
Goose. So
dog tags in the ocean.
Now,
did you notice at the end of the scene that there's an editing error?
No, I didn't. What was it?
So as George is sprawled out on the floor in his boxer shorts, the newspaper or magazine that he has is on the right-hand side of his body. But when Jerry enters and looks down at George and they've got that shot from Jerry's perspective, the newspaper and or magazine is on the left side of George's body now.
Huh. As he looks up,
it's back on the right.
What an eye.
And Jerry's still wearing that purple turtleneck.
When you're watching Seinfeld, you're keeping close track of where all the objects are in every shot transition to make sure that the object is in the right spot, right?
I mean, I've watched Seinfeld so many times, it's the only game I have left now. And so just of note, this is the end of the first part of the episode.
Okay. Yeah, so it picks up. Yeah, so if you want to stop listening to the podcast and save the rest for next week, you can stop now. Goodbye. Now that we have no more audience, we can continue.
Yeah, perfect. I feel like there's less pressure when no one's listening.
Yeah, it's way easier, just the two of us. We're in the unemployment office again. George is trying to explain the whole Vandalay Industries thing, says a guy was intimidated by him because he can sell latex. And the woman is not having it. She's seen this game before. But George, thinking quickly, literally on his feet, sucks up to the lady by remarking about the photo of her very plain looking daughter. And, you know, he says, you know, he's so ravished by this photo. He can't believe this beautiful woman, you know, she says she doesn't even have a boyfriend. And George just acts like she's toying with him and blah, 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 blah. This is a good George lie. It's one of the best, I think.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's very convincing. The lady gives George the phone number, takes care of whatever that thing is he has to sign, I guess, to end his benefits. And George is going to go on a date.
Yeah, this whole scene is just so, like, George is such a weasel. He's such a weasel. And I can't believe that this woman, Mrs. Sokol, is that her name? Sokol?
Yeah.
Who's got the kind of I've seen it all attitude, actually fell for this.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Like, I guess, I don't know. She's just like, and she knows this guy's a loser. Why does she want him dating her her daughter?
That was my thought. She knows that he lied just to try and extend his unemployment insurance, and yet when he agrees or like offers to date her daughter, she's like, oh, don't worry about that. I'll give you the unemployment insurance extension. Like, that in and of itself speaks something about George. Because, I mean, it wasn't like she was like, you know what? I'll let this extension keep going if you date my daughter. Like, if she was offering it to him, maybe this would make more sense. But as it is right now, how she fell for that, I don't know. But George Costanza does a wonderful job of convincing her.
Yeah, he sells it. And, you know, she gives him the phone number. It works. We have a quick cut to the monologue. And this is kind of a weird monologue. Jerry is basically talking about George in this monologue.
That's my only note. It just says, is this about George?
Yeah, because he talks about how he has this friend who is on unemployment. And he did more work to stay on unemployment than he would, you know, in an actual job. It seems like it's directly about George. Like, I mean, maybe this was an existing bit Jerry had, but I mean, it seems like we're in the same weird universe where it's like these monologue bits. It's like that night Jerry did this bit at a show, like the same one with the Elaine's alcoholic boyfriend. It's weird.
That's how I related to it as well, that it just seemed like normally I always kind of picture the monologues as taking out place or outside the sign universe.
Yeah, me too.
And yet this just makes me kind of wonder, and I mean, if that's what it is, did Jerry literally that night go to the club and then make fun of his friend who's on
his bit, just making fun of his friend?
man, I've got this friend who's a loser, and he's a real guy. Let me tell you about him.
He's in the audience tonight.
There he is, George Costanza.
What a loser.
Hey, he's with that woman he doesn't even like. Yeah, it's really strange. I'm not sure why Jerry is doing this, how the bit works, like why it's like in universe, and yet it is.
Yeah, it's weird. So the next scene is this weird subplot that I don't know why it's included in the episode, except as a stretch. I feel like maybe in the writer's room, or maybe just Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David, they thought the line, "You have to go and see the baby," was really funny. And they were just like, "We gotta have that in an episode. We gotta." Because it's really just a nothing scene. Like, they go see this baby. We have no idea who these characters are. The woman is a jerk to her husband. Kramer says the baby looks like Lyndon Johnson. Wife says the husband's an idiot. And that's it. That's the scene.
Yeah, and the whole thing doesn't really make a lot of sense in terms of the Seinfeld universe, because so these two characters, Carol, I think is her name.
I don't know. I didn't even write it down.
It does make a lot of sense because, number one, they kind of play it off later like this is Elaine's friend. And not Kramer's friend or Jerry's friend. Mm-hmm. And yet that's exactly how they're playing it here. This woman is in multiple episodes, and yet she has a completely different husband later. They live in the Hamptons, and they, I guess, have another baby. I don't know. Is it supposed to be the same husband? Did they just retcon that baby and they just had their baby again for the first time? Is this an ugly baby as well? Why is this one not ugly? There's all sorts of questions here that don't make any sense to me.
Yeah. So did you notice at the end of the scene, I think they have Jason Alexander yell at the end of the scene, or it sounds like him. Is it supposed to be, who is supposed to be yelling as they cut to the apartment?
I don't know. It sounded like Jason Alexander though.
Yeah. And I guess the implication is that Kramer dropped the baby?
That seems to be the implication, but like the yell is clearly Jason Alexander.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. So there's a cut to George's date with the daughter of the unemployment officer. They had a Big Mac on the date.
Delicious. But,
this seems to, you know, be good. You know, she enjoyed it, and she invites him up. George tries to get out of it, and she goes in for the kiss.
I mean, does he reciprocate that kiss? I'm assuming he does.
I guess he must. I mean, you know, he's in this situation. He's gone on the date. He's got to carry through. That's another 13 weeks of unemployment.
When the blandest woman in town is bearing down on you with her lips, you can't say no.
Mm-mm.
I like in the scene that George is talking about how he's got an interview at a hardware store and that he finds hardware fascinating. Wouldn't you like to make a key? Which made me think about how whenever I'm getting a key copied and they're putting it in that machine, I always think, I wish I could do that. I wish there was like a self-serve machine where I got to trace the key out.
I mean, they don't really even seem to do much. They just put the key in the little lock. They put the blank in, and then they press the button, and then the machine cuts the key. It just does it all automatically.
Oh, really? The ones I've seen, like the actual person like moves it around so it gets the contours of the key and everything.
Oh, well, I've seen a lot of them where like there's just like a little like a. Like a guide that sits on the original key, and then the cutting tool like is on the blank and then cuts it to trace it.
Oh, well, that's almost identical to the one I'm thinking of, except that the person moves it, but it's sitting on a guide still.
Oh, no. And this one, they just push a little button.
Oh, next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Really free you up to, I don't know, cut additional keys.
Well, that's why I got those colored keys now. They got time to think about color. Yeah, so there's a quick cut to disaster after Kramer's dropped this baby. And then there's a cut to the monologue where Jerry just again complains about this gotta see the baby thing in the monologue.
There's so
I
many
mean,
monologues in this
I
episode.
know, and this is the same joke that is not funny about not wanting to see the baby. And you know, there is a kind of funny thing about how no one wants to see the grandpa. That's kind of funny. That's a joke.
A cute little joke, yeah.
But yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I can't even relate to it because I just haven't gotten to the point in my life where people are having babies and they're like, "You gotta see my baby." Maybe I can't relate. Maybe it's just because I haven't had people asking me to see their baby yet.
You know, I have had that, but my fear, you know, I was happy to see the baby, you know. I mean, I think most newborns, they all just kind of look like slugs. It's quite a while. Like, I'm more interested in children when they've developed a bit of personality and, you know, have some kind of preference and they're not just like a slug that can't even focus their eyes.
But don't
But,
you like it when they do the grasping reflex and you put your finger in their
I
hand
mean,
and they grab it?
that's kind of nice. My fear, the problem is that new parents always want people to hold their baby. Like, not only is it a privilege, it's like a privilege you would never refuse. And I'm worried that I'm just going to be like Kramer and I'm going to drop their baby. Like, I don't feel like the like benefit is worth the like potential risk. Like, I mean, I will probably get a mild benefit for holding someone's baby. You know, the baby will do a little grasp, might do a little sneeze or something. That's cute. But if I drop that baby, that will never be forgotten. That is a taint on my life. I'll have to wear scarlet letter as a baby dropper. I'll wear a big scarlet B on my shirt forever if I drop a baby.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And even though, I mean, I can't think of the last time I held a baby. This must have been like eons ago. I just always think about when I like first got my iPhone or something like that. And you just like you place it down gently to charge and stuff like that. And it's like that, except it's a human being.
Yeah.
Because you know what? If you crack the case on the human being, you can't just go back to the Apple store and fix that problem for the
There's
parents.
even a soft spot on that baby's head where if you touch it, that baby could die. Their skull isn't complete yet.
I don't think it's just touching it.
Lay people should not be holding babies.
I don't think if you just touch, this is how these like rumors get started, an urban myth, and if you touch a baby on that spot on their head, they die.
Ugh.
Do you know what that spot's called? I can't remember.
The soft spot?
Yeah, I think it starts with an F.
I don't know.
The fontanelle.
Yeah,
And
don't
so
touch that.
that is the spot on an infant's skull which has soft membrane gaps because the skull is not completely formed yet.
Yeah, it hasn't fused yet.
It says right here you shouldn't touch it or else you could kill the baby.
Yeah,
Oh
exactly.
no, wait, it doesn't say that.
Says that in spirit. So Elaine's on a date with Keith Hernandez. It
Hernandez.
seems to be going well. They're kind of joking. They both have a inner monologue, and we see that Keith is trying to get out the confidence to kiss her. You know, and Elaine's, you know, getting bored waiting for him to kiss her. He's trying to psych himself up, and there's a really funny part where he goes in for the kiss and it's just getting a little passionate. And Elaine says, "Who does this guy think he is?" And in his inner monologue, he's like, "I'm Keith Hernandez."
It was a really good line. It's probably Keith Hernandez's best line in the entire episode.
Yeah. I like the implication that he's super full of himself, and loves bragging. Like later on their second date, he and Elaine are flirting. And he talks about how he's won like 12 golden gloves.
Yeah, 11 in a row or something.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means, but he's very proud of it.
I like how in this scene, when he's trying to decide if he's going to kiss Elaine and there's like a pause, Elaine fills the gap with, I love Cajun cooking.
Yeah, like, did they go out for a Cajun meal? I do like how he says his mom's half Cajun and she says her dad's half drunk.
Yeah.
Pretty good line.
Yeah, it was like a strange non sequitur, but I think they did a good job.
Mm-hmm. So after the date, we're in the apartment. Jerry's hanging out with Elaine. And Jerry, in a roundabout way, asks if they did a little fooling around. And Jerry is extremely jealous that they made out. And Elaine is not sure why he's jealous. And Jerry isn't sure either. He's jealous for many reasons.
I like how Jerry can't even bring himself to ask the question he wants to ask.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, so did you two have... And I mean, there's only one question that's going to finish that.
I like how Elaine tortures him with, like, do we have milk? And smiles a really big smile.
Cookies?
It's great.
Yeah, Jerry's just a tormented soul in this episode.
Oh, yeah, and it gets worse, because Keith calls and asks Jerry to help him move.
It's a big ask.
It is. I mean,
trust me, I know. I've asked you to help me move like 18 times now.
It's been terrible every time. I hate it.
Well, I'm going to fit one more in just before you move.
No. You're not moving.
You got to go up 8 floors.
No.
No elevator.
No. It is a big ask, though. Have you ever been asked prematurely to help someone move?
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, like someone early like... in their friendship where you don't feel like...
Oh, I see. I'm trying to think if... I mean, there's been times where people I don't know super well have asked me, but like I know a lot of other people in the group, so I've said yes.
Oh.
But in this scenario, like this is basically like Jerry and Keith Hernandez are moving this stuff by themselves.
Yeah, you know, when I was I met a, I don't know what I'm going to say, quite a while ago when I was like a co-op student, and for our non-Canadian listeners, it's like kind of like a paid internship that is pretty common in Canada. I was doing one of these internships and my fellow intern, he asked me, he was talking about moving and, you know, saying like all his friends were out of town because it was the summer and he only had one friend and he wasn't sure what he was going to do. His friend said he couldn't even help him and he had to move. And he was like forced to move out because his landlord was being a jerk or something, I forget. And, you know, like he like all but asked me, he's like, I don't know what I could do. If only there was someone who could help me move. Someone named Patrick. If someone could help me move, I wouldn't die. I was like, I guess I could help you move. When do you need move? Oh, great. Saturday, like 9:30. If you can come, that'd be really great. And then I was like, okay. But this was a terrible move. This guy had literally 6 CRT screens. He had a big, like, 27-inch CRT TV. Maybe it was, like, 32-inch. Pretty big, which was extremely heavy. And it was just the two of us moving all his stuff. And then he had, like, 4 monitors, like, all, like, above, like, 19-inch CRT screens. And so, like, if you don't remember, like, CRT screens are super heavy. Like, the big TV was maybe like 200 pounds, and each of these CRT monitors were about over 100 pounds, and so it was pretty heavy lifting these screens. I like, he didn't even use them all, he just had them, and I was like, why do you have all these screens? He's like, I don't want to lose them, or, you know, they're still useful, they still work. I was like, I know, but you already have like that nice LCD monitor. He's like, I know, but what if it breaks?
Did he move that one?
He moved the LCD. I moved a lot of CRTs. And what's worse, so like I'd only known him a month and we just worked together. Like we'd never hung out outside of work. Mm-hmm. And then what's worse is a month later, after he moved into another apartment, his landlord kicked him out because he decided that he wanted like his mother-in-law to live in the like bachelor suite or whatever that he moved into. So I helped him move again. I should have said no. I don't know why I didn't say no. That was my fault, you know, the second time, but it was terrible. Way too early. So I really sympathize with Jerry here.
Yeah. And I can't believe you did it again.
It was a mistake. You know, maybe actually I didn't help him move the second time. Maybe I got out of it. I feel
Did you or didn't you?
I can't remember. I can't remember if I'm just remembering one, like both sides of the move, like moving out of the old apartment into the new one as two moves, or if I'm remembering the second move. Because this was years ago. I don't know. Anyway, and what's worse is like later we see that Keith Hernandez has a comic variety of heavy objects that he needs to have moved, much like these CRTs.
He does have a comical list of things.
Yeah, like marble coffee table and like big bed and box spring. Lives on the third floor of a brownstone with no elevator. Ugh. Jerry does not think he's ready for this. And Kramer thinks, rightly, that he's being taken advantage of.
I mean, everyone seems to think that he's being taken advantage of. You know, Jerry's just got to have some backbone. You know, normal Jerry would just say no to this right out of the gates.
But he really likes Keith Hernandez.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, yeah. So next we see George's second date with this girl from the unemployment office. And she is upset because George is a loser. And she wants to break up with him. And she compares him, again, to Biff Loman.
Yeah, you know what? How does this keep happening to George? Have any of these people read Death of a Salesman? This has got to be the most unflattering comparison going.
Yeah, over and over.
I don't even understand how Jerry can keep doing it.
Yeah, Jerry takes real delight in it. Biff wants to be a buff. So anyway, this whole thing falls apart for George. He can't convince her to keep it going.
Like, where's George's spine? Have some backbone. Yeah. You know what? It's not worth it. What I wrote here is that he should just get a job. It's got to be better than this.
Yeah, this seems pretty bad. I feel like he just must be used to not working, you know?
Well, he's got a couple more seasons of it.
Yeah. And so meanwhile, Keith is on this date with Elaine, and Keith just kind of does a bunch of bragging, like he brags about these gloves, as we talked about earlier.
And 11 golden gloves. That's the most for a first baseman.
He and Elaine kind of have this uncomfortable flirting.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Metaphors. It seems kind of like she's making fun of him, but also is flirting. It's weird. And then Elaine is mad that Keith Hernandez smokes.
It's a big turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, if it was a celebrity, I'd let it ride for a while.
Yeah, he's Keith Hernandez.
Hernandez. Yes.
Keith Hernandez.
We've got to be down to no listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, so Elaine's mad about this. Then in the coffee shop, Jerry is talking with George. He admits, you know, he's been jealous, but he's come to accept it. He admits that Keith Hernandez and Elaine are the perfect match.
Yeah, and you know what? I never really got that impression, though. I mean, he is taking the high road, but I never got the impression that they are the perfect match.
No. I don't really know why. And also, he compares it to like one of those couples that look like brother and sister and are perfect.
Well, George does, I believe.
Yeah, what does that even mean? Is that a thing?
I don't know, but
Have
it
you
was
ever
seemed
known a
like.
couple that looked like brother and sister and were the perfect match?
Well, I remember that you and Emily were asked if you were brother and sister when we had dinner at that Japanese place.
Oh, that's true. I don't think we look very much alike, though.
You guys are that perfect couple.
And so we also have this bizarre thing where George talks about how he wants to, like, apropos of nothing, wants to sleep with a really tall woman. Like, he just all he thinks about is sleeping with a giant. And when Jerry says that he slept with a woman who was 6'3", he's real impressed.
Yeah, well, George is hoping for 6'5". But the whole thing is so strange. When he says that's all he thinks about, sleeping with a giant, it's his life's ambition. It's
It's
this
really weird.
it's a total non sequitur, and it's just so bizarre.
It's barely even a joke. It's just a weird thing. I have no idea how this even got on the show. I'm surprised someone at NBC wasn't like, this is just a weird joke. Get this out of here.
And yet they continue with the joke later on.
Yeah, there's a callback to it later. Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, Jerry lets it slip that he's going to help Keith Hernandez move. George, predictably outraged, especially because it's Keith Hernandez and he's not a fan. And In the unemployment office, we see George is about to lose his benefit. He has one last plan. He sees this baseball signed by the Mets. This woman's a big Mets fan. George says he's friends with Keith Hernandez, which is certainly a stretch, and then he can get him there within the hour. I don't know why George thought this would work.
Yeah, why 1 hour? Why would he promise 1 hour?
And then she's like, okay, you got 1 hour.
I love how he's like, "All right, Mrs. S, I and my good pal, Keith Hernandez, will be right back." And then, of course, he just like scampers off at full tilt again.
Yeah, he really wants to keep those benefits.
He's a sucker. Or she's a sucker that she's willing to do this one more time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, why would she believe him? This guy's clearly messed up so many times. I don't know.
Although, I mean, what does she have to lose?
Yeah, it's an hour. George runs out, and meanwhile, it's moving day. Keith Hernandez arrived at Jerry's apartment, and he describes this comically awful move with like a 12-section sectional couch, multiple dressers, bed with box spring, marble coffee table, whole thing. He won't hire movers. I mean, I feel like Keith Hernandez could afford some pretty good movers.
Yeah, that or he probably knows some really strong people.
Yeah, or he could afford to replace. Yeah, he. I mean, he's got all these baseball guys. Those guys are pretty strong. He weighs, 140 pounds. He's a skinny
Jerry,
man. He actually looks
140
especially.
pounds?
He actually looks especially skinny in this episode. But yeah, he's a thin man.
He is. In this scene, though, this is probably the scene in this episode where we see Jerry smiling at every single joke.
Yep.
Like, he's supposed to be upset that Keith is asking him to carry 3-inch thick marble, I guess, what is it, a coffee table?
Yeah.
And as Jerry asks if it's thick, he's got this huge grin on his face.
Know. He keeps trying to hide it with like he has like a he's like smiling, but he's like trying to frown at the same time.
He can only do that thing where he kind of like rolls his eyes and tries to like raise his face in to look like frustrated before it's like it looks like he's about to have a seizure.
Yeah, it's funny because we saw like pretty good Jerry Seinfeld acting with that JFK one, but this scene, it's just atrocious. The acting, so bad. Anyway, Jerry ducks out and Kramer pops in, sees Keith Hernandez, or he ducks out of the, he decides he's not ready to do the move. And then Kramer pops in, sees Keith Hernandez, Newman pops in. And they confront him. And you know what? Keith Hernandez remembers that fateful day. He says he did not spit. He remembers that they said, nice job, pretty boy, or nice game, pretty boy. But he did not spit on them. He says, Roger McDowell did it.
This scene is once again pretty good. I love the way that when Kramer's like, oh, I bet you don't remember me. Well, I remember you. Let me refresh your memory. And then once again, Newman just appears out of nowhere from behind the door. It's like they've got a little spring-loaded Newman back there. He's just ready to go.
Yeah.
But they do a really good job, and they, you know, they highlight the second spitter. They make use of the being behind the bush.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the gravelly road.
Now, did Keith Hernandez ever act in anything else?
He's in an episode of Law and Order, and he had a role being an extra in The Fugitive.
Because he is a better actor than Jerry Seinfeld. He is a pretty good actor for a baseball player. Like, sometimes you see, sometimes you see a cameo from some, like, famous athlete, and it's so awkward when they're acting because they're so bad. He's a pretty good actor. I think he's great.
He's relatively good, although I'm often impressed at how good a lot of sports figures are in their like cameos on TV shows. I think it must be because they've had a lifetime of being in front of the camera and doing interviews and stuff like that.
So they're just comfortable in front of the camera.
Yeah, so for them it's not weird to be in front of a camera.
Yeah, that could be. But even just acting at all is pretty hard. Like, I don't know. I've been in a couple like friends like movies where I have like one line, and I'm convinced that I've done a bad job with that one line. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an especially bad actor, but I'm very impressed.
Well, you're not in front of the camera all the time, though.
That's true. I don't have that comfort. So anyway, we learned that it's no wonder that that Roger McDowell spit on these guys, because they were jeering at Roger McDowell the whole game. At one point, Newman poured a beer on his head.
They feel bad about it now.
They feel bad. They've had this grudge for years. They accused Keith Hernandez. So, they offer to help him move.
Yeah, and then, of course, Elaine instantly calls. Such serendipity in this episode. The timing's amazing. Mm-hmm. Elaine calls immediately as they leave and offer to help him move. And it's funny because in a later season, you know, at first Kramer is kind of admonishing Jerry for like being taken advantage of in this move. I feel like in a later season, as everyone leaves, Kramer would probably turn around, or maybe while everyone's there, Kramer would turn around and would like chastise Jerry for backing out of the move, even though he told him not to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. This is a real uneven episode. I feel like they were biting off more than they could chew.
Kind of like us.
Yeah. But yeah, we see, you know, George comes back looking for Keith Hernandez. Keith is gone. George is doomed. And, you know, he shouts out at Keith as he's on the street. Jerry just kind of laughs, thinks he's doomed. And George is completely dejected. I like seeing George completely dejected. We definitely see more of this as the series continues. But I think he does it well. Looks good on him.
Yeah, he owns dejection.
But, you know, it's always darkest before the dawn.
What time of day?
Before the dawn. And, luck would have it, a super tall woman comes in. I forget what happened. George dropped something.
He dropped his wallet.
And this very tall woman, you know, comes up. George is quite pleased.
And now we've got the outro.
And that's the outro, yeah. There's a monologue. When you're moving, you really want boxes. You're looking for boxes everywhere. And then ultimately, You find a casket. It's real dark. You find a casket, which is a perfect box, but you're in it. It's funny, yeah. Though, like when you it is true. It is a good observation that when you want to move, you're looking for boxes everywhere, and you always feel like you're in competition to get boxes. You go to the grocery store to get those really nice apple boxes.
Oh God, you want those apple boxes more than anything else.
They're sturdy. You go to the liquor store, you get some pretty good boxes there.
I've got a specific liquor store staked out when I move. There's one I go to, and they give away a ton of boxes, and for some reason no one picks them up there, so I get a ton of them.
Yeah. I don't know. I would be fine buying boxes if they were reasonably priced.
No, but they're always, yeah, reasonable.
But they're always insane. Like, if they were a quarter a box, you know, I would pay $10 for enough boxes to move.
Yeah, so
and,
would I.
You know, they do not cost them $10 for those boxes, but they charge like $5 a box or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like $5 a box.
It's so expensive. I mean, they have real specialized boxes. They have like boxes for hanging up your coats in, and special boxes for TVs and computers, but they're so expensive. They're such a ripoff that you just end up scavenging. You know, you get those Apple boxes.
Yeah, I hate it collecting the boxes, though, because I almost feel like I'm slightly ashamed.
Yeah, I feel really pathetic when I'm getting those boxes.
Can I have an Apple box? Like, you're asking the store for their garbage.
Yeah.
And
you know, you're inconveniencing the employees because they've got stuff to do. They don't want to get new boxes from the back.
It's got to be irritating. And then, you know, there's that guy who comes up on the last day of the month, and he's looking for like, how many boxes you got? I'll take them all. Like, what do you have? Like 50 to 100 Apple boxes? And they're like, I have two. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's upsetting.
Because when I used to work in the grocery store, I used to have people who would come on the last day of the month desperate, and they'd come to my department, which was the meat department, and ask me for boxes. And I'm like, I don't think you'd want them. Like, they're saturated in blood. And
I'll take whatever you got.
I know. I'd literally have people be like, well, is it a lot? If it's just a bit, like if it's a little blood spot, it doesn't matter. I'll take it. I got to be out in like 4 hours.
All my stuff is bloody anyway.
So, Patrick, what did you think about this episode overall?
Well, I said it earlier. I think they kind of bit off a bit. Like, I mean, the episode was ambitious. It's their first double episode. I think they couldn't quite fill the time. I think they were probably always thinking, you know, they're always cutting things from episodes. Why don't we just do a double one? And I guess this is when Seinfeld was just starting to take off. You know, they got to do the double. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there was some filler in there. There was that scene where Jerry was acting like the jilted girlfriend. There was the scene with the baby. It was just really nothing and had nothing to do with the rest of the episode. But, you know, at the same time, there's the whole Mandalay Industries, you know, so you want to be my latex salesman, a classic Seinfeld moment. Mm-hmm. There's the JFK style reenactment, also hilarious. Keith Hernandez, the first like big celebrity guest star, also really funny. So I don't know. It had ups and downs. It was not uniformly excellent, but it was good.
Yeah, you know, I feel like if people have made it to the end of this episode of What's the Deal, they will probably get the impression that we don't like the episode that much, or maybe it's not a great episode, but it is actually a pretty good episode. It's just too long in parts, and so the pacing just feels a little uneven, as you pointed out a few times. But there's a lot of high points, and, you know, I bet if someone went in and edited this down to a standard length episode, it would probably actually be a really good episode.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, if you just had the George job stuff, you could do that. That could be George's plot. And then the Keith Hernandez stuff, that could be great. You know, you could cut down a lot of the Jerry being jealous. You could just establish that he's jealous, but you don't need 5 minutes of exposition about it. Mm-hmm. And it could be good.
You know what else would be good?
No.
Taking the time to check out whatsthedealshow.com, where you can view all of the show notes for today's episode. You can also listen to back episodes, read the show notes for other episodes. Why not? Maybe it's been a hard day. You want to unwind with some show notes. We got it. We've got them here for you. Our gift. What do you think about that idea?
Sounds good. Sounds fun. You can look at a good picture. Mm-hmm. There'll be a picture for this episode. I'll make one. Nice. I got something in mind.
Maybe you could tweet the picture, Patrick. Where would people go to see a tweet or something like that from us?
Yeah, if you're into Twitter, you can go to twitter.com/WTD show or just follow us at WTD show. We tweet all the episodes there. We, you know, we respond to your at messages. If you want to say something to us, give us some feedback on the show. Talk about audio quality, content, missing Chris Young, anything. We'll answer.
You know, we're also quitting this show for good.
Yeah. You know, we're also on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/whatsthedealshow or just type what's the deal into the Facebook searchy thingy. You can.
I think it's called a searcher.
Searcher, search bar, chat head. You can like our show. We post all the episodes there too. There are pictures. There's people who comment on the episodes there. You can read past comments. My mom comments on there sometimes. The whole thing. My brother asked for more episodes with my other brother. It's the whole thing. Mostly my family on there, I guess. Much like your Facebook, it's mostly your family. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, if you would like to leave some sort of rating for our show, do it for a different episode. Listen to a different episode of What's the Deal Show and rate that one. But if you feel like you really want to rate this one, the reason why I said that is because this is a guaranteed 5. Maybe you want to listen to another episode and get a sense of the quality. I know this one was a 5 in my heart and in my head. I know it was a 5 the whole way through. Mm-hmm. You can go on this application called Ping. It's hidden inside iTunes.
Information Tunes.
Can you get on Ping? Is that gone now? Is Ping officially dead?
All gone.
Well, if you don't want to do that instead, you can get onto iTunes. You can look at our show, What's the Deal Show, and you can leave a rating, leave a review. We'd love it. Leave a really bad one if you want, I guess. I don't know why you'd do that, but you could.
No, that
just
would be
honest with yourself.
Yeah, follow your heart. Everything
straight
the light
to a
touches.
Pot of gold. You know what? If you're inspired and you're not sick of this whole rotten system, you can tune in next week where we will be reviewing The Limo. The Limo is the 19th episode of the 3rd season. And in this episode, Jerry and George decide to take a ride in a limo that is not for them. Along the way, they end up picking up Elaine and Kramer, and things end up going a little bit off the rails, shall we say. And I think that's the teaser I'm going to leave for next week's episode.
You know, that episode, you know, I guess we'll talk about this next week, but it seems like a real early. I mean, it seems like a season 2 episode, you know? It doesn't seem like a season 3 episode.
I actually, when we rewatch this episode, maybe we'll feel differently about it, but I really, in my mind, this feels like a really good episode to me.
Hmm.
Interesting factoid about the next episode. One of the actors in this episode plays a completely different character later on in Seinfeld. Both times was speaking, too, which is kind of uncommon for Seinfeld, I think. All right. That was good. How did you feel doing this with just two people?
It was okay. I miss having the third host, though.
Well, I've got good news for you. Next week, I'm going to go ahead and say we will have a third host, and I can say with confidence that it will be our good friend, Mr. Young, will be along with us again next week. Things are getting back to normal here. It's been a bit of a crazy schedule, a lot of stuff going on, but we're about to bring it back to the What's the Deal show you know and you love. It's a fun noise.
Mm-hmm. Well, I look forward to it.
Yeah, so do I. All right. Well, thanks for listening in to the two-man experiment. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. We appreciate you tuning in every week. We love it, don't we, Patrick?
Love it, yeah. We'll keep doing it all the way. Sorry we didn't have an episode last week. We recorded it. My microphone flaked out or something. Not sure what happened.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be able to get something in there. You know, I'm still hopeful that I'll be able to retrieve the audio from last week's episode.
Use your computer magic.
I'll just
hit... It'll be a lost episode.
I'll hit the magic wand button, and it'll just be fixed. Sounds good. All right, let's sign off here. Thank you very much, as always, from your good friend and mine, Patrick Armstrong.
Goodbye.
And myself, Cameron Wong. Thank you very much, and we will see you again next week.
You know, we can release that episode as What's the Deal, The Lost Levels on What's the Deal, All Stars.
Mmm. Will we have some enhanced graphics?
Yeah, definitely, because the old podcast graphics, they can't match the 16-bit power, you know, of the super podcast.